Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to episode 54 of Slam Fire Radio for April 25th. That's right, just 8 more months till Christmas. I'm one of your hosts, Matthew McClatchy. Joining me is...
Trevor for the Fur Latte.
And Owen, I think it's actually a lot closer to Christmas than you think, in Woodstock.
Yes, it is.
It is snowing to beat the band here.
We just got another 10 to 15 centimeters of snow here in the end of April. And
it's the cleanup.
It is ridiculous.
You can set your watch to this storm every year. This is the cleanup. In 2 to 3 weeks, there'll be not a flake left on the ground. It's typical.
I'm looking forward to it. The good news is, here where I live, it turned to rain shortly in the afternoon. And so all of the snow that did accumulate is now gone here at the house, which is great. Because that's really nice. It was really depressing all day at school, looking outside and just watching it pile up.
We almost got canceled.
Yeah, we should have been. Actually, I was talking to the bus drivers at the end of the day, and they were saying the back roads were really slick. I don't know why we're talking about shutting schools on snow days, because while this is a Canadian show... this is a Canadian show, but it is a Canadian gun show. So, Owen, why don't you start us off with what you did with guns this week?
All right. Did a little bit this week. I went to the range.
And did you bring your snowshoes?
Yeah. Actually, it was surprisingly dry. Usually our range stays so wet, but we had about a week of decently warm and mostly sunny days.
It was lulling you into a false sense of security.
It was exactly what was happening. But, so I went down, went to the range, took my AR, and I bought a set of Magpul Pro iron sights.
Ooh, pro. How do they work?
I really like them. They're metal.
Are they higher?
Yes, they are.
They are, eh?
The regular backup iron sights that I had on the polymer ones, the regular ones, are bottom third co-witness through my red dot. And these ones are half.
So right on.
So they're perfect, perfect co-witness.
Oh, so now see... My backups are perfect co-witness with my EOTech, so I don't know if these ones would be, then, if they're higher.
They might be higher.
Yeah, they might be top third.
Yeah, but I like the fact they're metal. They're smaller. They're a lot lower profile, for sure. They're iron sights. They work well.
Yeah, you got them zeroed and getting some pretty good groups with them?
Yep, not bad. I didn't shoot a whole lot. Just because I had some other people, some guys come in behind me at the range. So I shot a little bit and then got it sighted in and good enough and then let them shoot. And then when they left, I went back and did a bunch of work with my Glock and shot my Glock for the first time this year.
How'd that work out for you?
I am rusty and, definitely need a lot of work.
I don't understand. All that airsoft practice didn't, hone your skills?
I haven't really been using that much, actually. I don't know what it is. I don't know I just really seem to notice the kick of the gun. I think it's just been because it's been months since I've shot.
Well, you're a bit of a sissy when it comes to recoil. Yeah, I had to step up my game. He didn't bite at the airsoft crack, so I'm like, all right, gloves are off. I got to call him names.
Yeah, and what power fat, what feet per second do you load your 9mm to?
1400.
Yeah, he's running open, remember, Owen?
Yeah, not open when you're...
about 130 power factor.
Yeah. My power factor at Nationals was almost 150.
Whoa. That's crazy. You don't need to go that high, man. You really don't.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, my loads are pretty hot loads.
I guess so.
And they're multi-purpose loads, so I do it on purpose. But
here's the thing, though. I did some shooting with my Glock, actually in the video. Mm-hmm. Actually, I shot it when I made the video, but it didn't make it into the video. But I shot some Hornady Critical Defense, home defense loads, through the Glock with my IPSC loads interchanged with them just to see if I could notice the difference. And the gun was louder, and there was a little bit more recoil, but not a whole lot. I didn't really actually notice a whole lot of extra recoil compared to IPSC power factor. So I don't know if that's just a function of, you know, a good grip and a good stance and good recoil management, or if it's just the Glock soaks it up nicely, or maybe I'm just dull and don't figure things out very well. I don't know. Yeah. But they shot to the exact same point of aim, and I didn't notice any increase in recoil that, you know, threw off my rapid firing to any extent.
That the point of aim, point of impact didn't change, because, you know, that's always really important. If you're going to sight in your gun, you should probably sight it in with your defense ammo.
That's right. Yep. Yeah, if you ever plan on using your gun for defense, of course, you want it set up for the ammo you would use in a defensive situation. Now, that being said, I would just use whatever ammo I managed to get my hands on first if there was any sort of defensive situation. But I do actually have some, like I said, critical defense ammunition here at the house, which, it's a little comforting, I guess.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I do have some, like, home loads done up that are with hollow points, but they're... I made those really hot.
Yeah,
almost too hot to handle. So anyway, I'm kind of a little bit annoyed that I've loaded as much ammo as I have ahead, because I might have changed my load a little bit. But
well, here's the thing, though. I mean, I think, and this happens to me from time to time too. If I haven't fired in quite a while, I do notice that recoil is more prominent if I haven't fired the gun for a bit. I think you just need to get back out there with another couple hundred rounds and just burn through it. And I think by the end of it, you're going to be right back to managing that recoil just fine.
Yeah, I concur.
I
remember when I took my black badge, I was very recoil shy at the beginning of it. And at the end of it, it was, you know, night and day after, 300 rounds. Just, you know, you learn to manage it so much better just by actually doing it. And I think you can lose that.
Yeah, so anyway, that's all I did.
Cool. All right. Well, Trevor, what'd you do?
No, you're next.
I know, but I'm also the lead host, so I can tell you what to do.
Oh, okay. I see. So it's going to make for a smooth... You just like telling me what to do.
No, I like making for a smooth transition, but now that that's out the window, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you've done with guns?
My work here is done. You and I did some stuff. I'll let you talk about it, and then I'll just comment on it and stuff and correct you where you're wrong when you forget the minor details that don't matter, but I'll be sure to throw them in if you forget.
I can't wait. I literally can't wait.
My 870 barrel and Versamax came back from Tactical Ordnance, and very happy. The quality of the work was outstanding. I was kind of hoping for... on the 870 barrel, a bit more of like a factory finish, where it would be kind of, the crown would be kind of rounded, and where he cut off the rib, that would be kind of smoothened out. It's very blunt. It's very 90 degrees. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that it's not a professional job. It still looks amazing. It's still really well done. Put another bead in there, but my magnet fiber optic that fits on the rib that I had on the front of the gun before fit in place right behind the bead, so I still have that on there.
Cool.
The barrel now, the sticks out about 3/4 inch in front of the +4 S&J hardware extension.
Cool. And he thread that for choke tubes as well?
He did. Oh, he did, nice. Absolutely. That was the whole...
Yeah.
Rather than... I had the 870 police barrel on there.
Right, but no choke tubes, and that's, that sucks.
No choke tube, yep. And the magazine extension was out in front of the barrel, so I thought... rather than go buy another barrel, I'll get this barrel cut down to match the length of my magazine tube, so the gun will look better. And I'll have the factory barrel. I'll have it threaded for chokes, which I didn't have before, so it's a win-win-win. I've got a Magpul barrel clamp front sling mount and a set of Magpul furniture in the mail as we speak. Big thank you to Jeff Reese out in Calgary at the Calgary Shooting Center. He hooked me up again with Magpul. Big time goodness. And the bomb actually, no, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say he carried his gun at work the other day. Maybe I am. I don't know.
It's too late now. Allowed,
yeah, it's out there now. Yeah, he was doing the range thing or whatever. Like,
he's at a range. He's at a certified range. He has an ATT to the range. He was fine.
Yeah, yeah. And he just got to carry his gun all freaking day.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I don't get that.
And our American friends are going, what do you mean that'd be cool?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's anyway. The sort of thing we look forward to here in Canada.
Yeah, getting a job where we can carry a gun indoors. Anyway, it was so cool. So the barrel's great. It's on the gun. This, you know, it'll be finished here soon, back to its tactical goodness. Now, as a result of putting my 870 back into Magpul, I'm down to one firearm in the house with wood on it.
Good for you. How does that make you feel?
A little, well, good, because I really like that gun, and I won't dare mess up that gun. That's my 30-30, right? My Model 94.
We could just spray paint it black.
Blasphemy. Oh, my God.
We could get that, rubberized coating you spray under your truck. Yeah.
Ever. Under rock guard.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, that would protect it from 7.62 by 39 brass.
Yeah, and then you could put a like an EOTech on the top. You'd be all set.
Why don't I just sell and get the Mossberg tactical lever action?
There you go. See, now you're talking sense.
When I do that, I want you to kick me in the manberries. So, anyway, the Versamax did a fantastic job. He threaded the mag release or the bolt release and put an extended bolt release button on there. Completely opened up the feeding port and welded the front of the lifter, polished it. It all looks like it was done at the factory. It's amazing. So I'm very happy with that. So I'm going to get some dummy rounds made up and start practicing reloads here in the old man cave.
Cool.
What else I got going on here? Oh, 10X gave me a couple of adjustable screws that go into my 686 Smith & Wesson revolver that adjust the tension on the mainspring. Mm-hmm. So that you can basically tweak it to get it down to the lightest possible trigger pull, yet still have reliable, you know, primer hits.
Right.
And I had lost them. And by lost them, I mean they were in the back of the case, and I couldn't find them in the case. The case for the gun, that is.
Right.
Anyway, so I found them, and I put those in, and I just kind of played with it here where I think it's going to be good, but I got to get it out to range and test it. So it's scary how, like, you can get the trigger pull. I'm sure the double action trigger pull is going to be down to about 6 pounds.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. Yeah, and that's got a nice trigger as it is, right?
Yes, so, it does. Yep.
Yeah. That's it for me, boys.
Cool. All right. Well, are there any listeners out in Smithers, Alberta? Because if so, Steve Lee and I are going to be there July 6th to July 19th, and we're looking to shoot some gophers. So anybody in that area who has some good gopher hunting stomping grounds, let us know and you get a visit from me and Steve. Well, we'll be happy to go out and shoot your ammo for you. I mean, with you. I mean, pay for it. I mean, we just want to shoot gophers. It'll be fun. So, yeah, let me know. Also, apparently I have a new tactical baby stroller for 3-gun events on the way. So, thanks to Craig Fearon for that.
He also said, basically, the heck with you, Owen.
So yeah, Trevor was talking about making his baby stroller for 3-gun, and Owen, you made fun of us, and so Craig has one that he doesn't use anymore, I guess. So he said I could have it.
Well, it's good to see that he manned up.
And basically said, yeah, because you made fun of him, you're not getting anything.
You get nothing.
That's right. I don't care. Yeah.
Go hang out with your knight friend who said you need to carry all your own gear.
Funny. So I did go to Trevor's last weekend, like he alluded to earlier. He didn't actually allude to it. He actually straight out mentioned it, but that's okay. That's your grammar lesson for the night. So I loaded up 1,009 mil. Actually, I loaded up about 809 mil because Trevor got sick of me breaking his press and did the last 200 for me.
You weren't breaking the press. You were just going too slow.
Well, I was being cautious.
No, I needed a break from trimming 308 brass.
Right. It was funnier my way, but that's cool. So I loaded up 500 rounds for myself for IPSC practice, and I loaded up 500 rounds for Jewel, reduced power load. She is a little bit recoil sensitive, but she is taking the handgun defensive course with Tommy. So we needed a gun and a load that would work for her. And let me tell you, it doesn't recoil very much. It's basically the minimum load for the powder and the projectile that we have. And I do have a reduced recoil spring in the gun, which is good, because otherwise I don't think it would cycle.
I think so, because it's still the minimum factory.
Yes, you're right. It probably still would. But let me tell you, there is not much recoil to this at all. It was very, very easy to shoot. So I think she's not going to have any problems at all with that, which is really good. Other than that, we did do some shooting with the AR and the T-97. So Trevor's T-97 arrived, and so we shot the heck out of that for a day and a half almost. Oh, no, I guess it was just one day. We didn't take it the second day. But
we didn't? Oh, no, we didn't.
Talk about
light. Yeah, that's right. That was the first and only time I ever shot it.
Yeah. No, it was neat. Nice and short, compact. It, you know, trigger's not that bad. I like it. I would almost consider getting one as sort of a trunk gun to kind of have with me for the stray coyote that happens to wander across my path while I'm out, you know, in the truck or whatever. But it's a neat gun. For me anyway, the downside is the sights. The sights are not the same quality as an AR. The AR sights just seem to be clearer. I don't know if the aperture is just bigger or if it's the fact that there's not so much material on either side. Something, these sights seemed a lot more difficult for me to use. They didn't kind of come to eye just as naturally as it did for the AR, but that could just be, you know, I'm not used to the way that it feels whenever I pull it up too. So,
and it's definitely the rear sight is the problem. The front sight is your standard mil-spec front sight pulse, just like you'd find in an AR.
Absolutely.
The adjustment, you have to drift the front sight pulse like you would on a 8.58 or an SKS or an AK, same kind of deal. You got to get one of those pushers, so that's a pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
Rear sight, like you said, multiple apertures of different sizes and different elevations.
Yeah. So I think what you ended up doing is picking the biggest aperture and then just zeroed it for
that's
what
correct,
you would.
Yeah.
Yeah. That way you just have the one aperture, because I believe you're planning on putting a flat top and then like an EOTech or something on it anyway later on, or maybe a scope.
Yeah, I think. It'll be I'll upgrade my Leupold to the Burris M TAC on my STI Air and put that Leupold onto the T-97.
That'd be all right. That's a 1.5 to 4.5.
1.5 to 4.
1.5 to 4. Yep. That would be a good. That'd be a really nice little scope on the T-97.
Yeah.
It seemed to be accurate enough. I think that you could stretch that out and use it as at least a medium range coyote gun, which is really. The distances that you have to shoot coyotes around your place anyway isn't all that long, so I think it would work out quite nicely.
Yeah. Yeah, it depends on the time of year and if you can get on a farmer's field, whatnot, but you're still probably never going to get a shot.
Longer than 500 yards.
Oh, I wouldn't even try and shoot a coyote at 500 yards. I was going to say 200.
Yeah, 200 is probably about the... Yeah. I mean, you're just not going to get those stretches of land anyway.
That's it. Not around here.
No, too much forest, which is great. So last, I installed, finally, the Trigicon night sights for my Glock. They arrived quite a while ago, but I didn't have the proper tools to install it, and Trevor wouldn't let me do it the way Owen did it, which worked just fine for Owen, but apparently I have to use the proper tools, which I did, so that was cool.
Still not talking to Owen over that one. What's the one thing that you did here that I had done and then you took it from me at the last second and put like the last turn on it so you could say there I did it?
Yes, that was you. Yes, you put in the factory slide release.
Oh,
slide
right.
Lock. And so because it came with an aftermarket, I had to switch it out for a factory one to remain legal in production for IPSC. And so Trevor basically installed the whole thing, and he was pushing the pin back through to kind of lock everything back in place. I said, whoa, stop. Let me finish it. He goes, huh? So I take it out of his hands, and I push the pin the rest of the way through. And then I say, now I can say I did it.
Well done.
It's kind of like, you know, those places where you make wine, you know, and for you have to do, you know, two steps of the process yourself.
That's right.
So that it's legal.
Just to say that you did it.
That's right.
Yeah. So I did
almost
that.
Like an 80% lower.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
You do the last steps.
And then let you use my tools.
Yep. They're really cool sights. They're Trigicon inserts, so night sights. But then the front sight is a bright orange kind of day glow paint dot with the Trigicon sight in the middle. So during the day, the back sights are blacked out, of course, because there's no paint on them. It's just the Trigicon inserts, which you don't see. Tritium inserts that you don't see. And in the front, you just see this great, big, blazing, bright orange. So it's really, it's almost not quite as effective as having a fiber op, but very close to it. The front sight really pops.
Definitely the best of both worlds. It's like a fluorescent paint.
Mm-hmm.
So like you said,
it
day
glows.
So
yeah.
It's because my night sights during the day are just... three little black. Dim white dots.
Yep.
You know, I've got a little white paint around my insert, so during the day I get that, but this is much, much better. And mine are dying anyway.
Yeah.
So this, I would definitely pick up that set.
It's a really nice set. Now, here's the other thing. I did watch a Chris Costa YouTube video here yesterday, and he was talking about tritium night sights, and he said if you can, what he actually does on his is he doesn't put tritium in the back. He just puts a tritium dot in the front. And then, because he says that you can, and I have experienced this just by playing with my gun last night, you can bring your gun up, kind of cocked to the left a little bit, and you get three dots. But what you don't realize is the front dot is actually all the way to the left, and then you have your two dots. Like, you don't actually have it centered, but you don't realize it, because all lights are the same color and the same brightness.
Yes.
So what he recommended was to, if you can, get different colored tritium inserts, which you can. Now, this set didn't, so I have the three greens. So what I did is I took a red magic marker, and I just put a dot on the back two tritium inserts. And what that did was, it was not enough ink to actually blot it out. It just dims them. So now when I pull the gun up in pitch black, I have this super bright front tritium dot, and then I have two kind of half power dots, and now I know which one's the front sight and which two are the back sight, and it comes up very quick, very easy to find my sight in the dark, and I know I've got my front sight between the back sight. So,
you know how I do it is when I just get in habit now. Maybe this is a bad habit, but as I drive out and take a sight picture, I tilt the gun up just slightly.
So you know that one that's high is your front.
That's right. That one is high. It's my front. And so that way it's all lined up. And as I come into that sight picture, I just drop that down in between the other two.
Yep. And that would work too. I did experiment with that a little bit last night, that same technique. It's funny. We both thought of it. And the reason why I decided not to continue with it is because it is not the muscle memory that I've learned already for IPSC.
That's right.
IPSC is straight out, and that's what I've learned. And so I didn't want to manipulate that. I wanted to stay true to what I learned. So I just kind of thought a little bit and figured I'll do a little experiment with this magic marker on something that was not my, you know, $100 sights here. But it turned out that it is transparent. You can see through the ink. So, you know, I just put it on and it worked very well. So anyway, so that's me. I'm done with what I've done. So why don't we move into some upcoming events / news. The first thing we want to mention is the Slam Fire Radio Flyer. It's on our website. Just go to the main page. There's a little thumbnail of it. Click that. Print it off. Post a picture of yourself posting it up at, you know, your local gun range, gun club, gun store, library, wherever. And then post that picture on Facebook, which nobody's done yet. So thank you very much for participating in our little competition. But yeah, whoever, we're going to randomly...
I think I'll do that this week.
Yeah, and you might win.
I'm going to take it down, I'm going to take a picture, and I'll post it up, and maybe I'll get a chance to be on the show.
That's right. Whoever wins, we're just going to random draw whoever, for all the people who do it. You know, you get to come on the show with us and shoot the crap, so you should totally do that. T-shirt orders are pretty much done, so don't worry about that anymore, unless you want to go place a bid on the XXL long sleeve original run Slamfire shirt.
What's that at? Do we know?
It's at $75 right now. All funds will be donated to the Laurentides Autism Foundation. This is the charity that we have chosen for this year's charity shoot. So you are sending your money off to a good cause, and you get an original, one-of-a-kind Slamfire Radio t-shirt. So check that out. It's on our Facebook wall.
Maybe we can up the ante. Maybe if the shirt goes for like $150, we'll let the winner shave my goatee off at the charity shoot or something.
Whoa. Yeah, that's not awkward at all. I'm sure we'll come up with something better than that.
Well, I might have to start bidding because
they can shave my head.
They can shave your head. Dude, there you go.
I've had this goatee since the 11th grade. Like, it's never come off.
That's true. That is true. That would be kind of funny to see you without it.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
I can't.
Oh, and you can't bid. You're not allowed.
$150 and we shave Trevor's goatee. All right, Practical Armed Response Academy shooting course. This is with Tommy Nelson. It's August 2nd and 3rd. There is one spot left. If you would like it, let us know. We will get you in. It's going to be awesome. Those of you who can't make it for the course but still want to come play, the next day on Sunday, the 3rd, we will be having a club-level IPSC match, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So come on out and have some fun with us if you get a chance to. The multi-gun is coming up August 16th and 17th. It's 12 stages. The registration form's on the Restigouche website, which I think you can just Google Restigouche Gun Club and it'll come right up. It's $40. Please pre-register. We need to get numbers. So,
yes, because I want to do squatting ahead of time, etc.
That's right. And the last thing I want to mention before we get into the news. Sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah. I've got to mention something.
Okay.
I am proud to announce that the multi-gun match has an official match sponsor.
Nice.
Yeah.
Who's that?
Fresh Tech Ventures.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Fresh Tech Ventures has graciously agreed to sponsor our match, so they are the official match sponsor. And I understand that there might be some swag available as door prizes provided by the gracious sponsor. And it's not going to be like a used Owen undershirt.
Well, it might be.
It might be. All right,
might
fine.
Be as yeah.
It might have Owen's musk on it. You can take it home and sleep with it. No, that's too much.
Yes, there will be some cool.
Hey, that'll
some...
give you like up 3 armor, up 3 dexterity, you know, like plus 5 strength. So I mean,
nice.
Yeah, but it's minus 3 chicks dig it. So
well, that's true. Yeah. Oh, minus, I don't know.
minus 3 chicks dig it. That's awesome. So yeah, big thank you to our sponsor. So that's yeah. Oh, and. Did we mention SummerSlam?
I don't think we mentioned SummerSlam, no.
Okay, well then real quickly,
go ahead.
Also proud to announce that SummerSlam also has a match sponsor this year. None other than the National Firearms Association. They contacted us and said we would love to partner up with one of Canada's premier Level 3 IPSC matches and be a part of it. So we're really excited. They're going to be on site taking... new memberships and just there to schmooze with the people and meet the shooters and and charity shoot. Sean Bevins, the executive vice president of the NFA, will be on hand for the charity shoot this year as well.
That's awesome. That's going to be really cool. You guys got to meet this guy. He's a really cool guy.
Yeah.
You're actually going to get to hear him actually in a couple of minutes here. We're going to call him up and talk to him a little bit about what's been going on. So
yeah, because through the Magic Radio, that didn't already happen.
No, it certainly did not, but it did, but that's okay. So last thing I want to mention before the news is the Thunderbird Tactical Carbine Clinic. We do actually have one spot open still for that as well. Just like the other course, it's $200 due now. Let us know if you want in. It's going to be really cool. It's being taught by Master Instructor Daniel Shaw. This is a cool cat when it comes to running your gun. You need if you have any sort of aspirations of running your AR like a pro, you got to come out and check out this clinic. It is going to be really, really neat.
If you're not familiar with Daniel Shaw, you can check out his podcast, Gunfighter Cast.
Yep.
And after you listen to a couple episodes, I guarantee you're going to want to take part in this clinic.
Absolutely. So let us know about that. Come on out and have some fun.
Hi everyone, Chris Anderson here. Date change. Everyone, step into the time machine. We're moving the fundraising event into the future. Some people couldn't make the original date, so we changed it. Saturday, June 21st, 2014, the Spring Swiss Arms Fork It Over fundraiser. This is a non-profit event. All proceeds go to the Swiss Arms Reclassification Challenge. Now, if you've ever wondered if it's possible to eat and drink your way out of life's problems, that's exactly what we're going to try and do at this event. So, Saturday, June 21st, 2014, start time, 5:30 p.m. at 6 Eugene Street in Toronto, www.thebks. That takes you to the website for the banquet hall. You can order tickets over the phone or by email, or you can buy tickets in person at Al Flaherty's Outdoor Store. Ticket price, $100. So what do you get? Vegas-style buffet, free parking at the venue, plus all ticket holders are entered for door prize draws. Plus, keep your ticket because after the event, you can take it to Al Flaherty's Outdoor Store and get a free hat with your next purchase. The bar is a cash bar with proceeds going to the challenge, so bottoms up. And if you need more info, head over to chrisandersonpresents.com, click on the events tab, and scroll down. It's all there. Our guest speaker is Edward L. Berlew. He's Canada's foremost firearms law expert. He's currently leading a class action lawsuit to fight the reclassification of the Swiss Arms series of rifles. And for sponsors, we've got Wolverine Supplies, who donated an Utah shotgun. We also have Canada in the Rough, the nation's number one outdoor and hunting show, giving us some support. We also have Canada Ammo giving us help as well. Mystic Precision from the West Coast has sent us support. And we can't forget Al Flaherty's Outdoor Store, the last brick-and-mortar gun store in the city of Toronto. Check out all their web pages for great deals and info. And mark the date, June 21st, 2014. Get the info at chrisandersonpresents.com. I hope to see you at the event.
I'm Ed Berlew, and I want to see you at the Swiss Arms fundraiser dinner.
So I guess that brings us into some news. Trevor, you want to bring us this first news story here?
No, because it was sent in by Jason Philp.
Oh, so Owen. Well, actually, Jason Philp sent in both of our news stories.
Great. All right, fine. I'll take the first one.
Yeah, all right.
I actually spoke to Mr. Philp on the phone today, but it's a story for another day. The Easter Bunny hunt numbers are down.
And so as soon as I saw that headline, I was like, nah, that's funny.
This is a story out of New Zealand. The annual bunny shooting spree in central Otago has come up a bit short this year, but organizers say it's a good thing. Central Otago is plagued by rabbits, and hunters turn out to cull the pest in the Great Easter Bunny Hunt charity event each year.
Isn't that awesome?
It's so beyond awesome. It's Easter, let's go shoot some rabbits. The count this year was well down, which is probably a good thing for the farmers. Hunters killed 7,478 rabbits, less than half the 18,027 killed last year. Yeah, it's awesome. Come here, they do it on Easter. It's awesome. The lowest count for a long time, he said. And there's a website there. Maybe we can include that in the show notes to the information. So New Zealand has a rabbit cull, and they have it on Easter.
Isn't that awesome?
This is so awesome.
The I think the takeaway
they're
here
pests.
Is
they eat the farmers' vegetables.
Absolutely, and you
they
make
gotta,
so
you know
you make so many good
from the company here. And anyway,
yeah, probably that's all
I
right.
I will cook you rabbit this fall. Well, you will understand.
That's the thing. You get so much good food out of this too, but it's just I kind of thought it kind of showcased how hunters and conservation and the environment, they actually all work together very nicely. You got
that's
an overpopulation
why I shot something
of something.
On Earth Day.
That's right. If you got an overpopulation of something, you've got to manage that somehow. What better way than to utilize the sport of hunting, which we already have? So get out there and control the population by blowing off a rabbit's head.
I believe one of the largest contributors to conservation in Canada is hunters.
It is.
Not the largest contributor.
Absolutely. I mean, where do you think all of our hunting fees or our licenses go to that's going towards conservation?
Exactly. Ducks Unlimited, right? We're running out of ducks. Let's protect some habitat. The ducks come back so we can shoot them.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's win-win, really. Absolutely. Well, except for the duck.
Well, no, as a species.
As a species, it is win-win.
The more there are, the less chance there is that the individual one's going to get shot.
That's right. That's up right your chances.
Less
that's
competition great. For food and habitat. No. If only we had started hunting dodos, right?
Right. Wait. Okay. Owen, bring us this next one.
What about pandas?
Maybe what about
panda
pandas?
Season. No? Too much. All right.
Not yet. Maybe later.
Okay.
But you have to choke them.
That's horses. Get it straight.
My bad.
Yeah.
We have a horse season?
This is another foul story. sent by Jason Philp. Wild turkeys becoming a menace in Souris.
It's Surrey.
Surrey?
Yeah.
Souris? It's spelled Souris.
I think it's Surrey. I could be
actually,
wrong.
It's spelled Souris.
It is spelled Souris. So you go ahead and pronounce it Souris for the
call
rest
it
of the.
Souris.
Yep.
When people say Souris has a bunch of turkeys living there, that shouldn't be viewed as a reflection on the.
I think it should citizens. Be citizens. Yeah. Yeah. I think it should be.
I was going to say, I don't think that's a word.
Yeah.
It views a reflection on the citizens of this pretty southwestern Manitoba town. It's meant literally. Wild turkeys moved in about 10 years ago. At first, it was just a dozen or so, and no one minded. This fall, their numbers grew to about 60. They started to turn into a menace. Jason asked, what pressure can we put on to have a turkey season? The tourist potential is massive.
I think that also might be a number. The numbers grew to 60? That's not really a big flock when it comes to...
Unless they're all hanging out in the town park.
In which case, that is a lot. If it's a
that's
small,
right.
Yeah.
And well, then
when,
they can
when
simply
Canada
get rid of
geese
it
do it.
Oh, yeah.
When Canada geese invade parks down in the U.S., hunters go in and take them out.
Yep. they should be doing that more often. It was exactly a flock like that that took down the airliner that went into the Hudson.
Ooh.
So, yep. But yeah,
my civic duty every fall and shoot as many of them as I can.
Good for you.
To the question, yes, tourist dollars, big time. Like, I'm sure one of the reasons why we haven't lost our spring bear season in New Brunswick, like Nova Scotia has and like Ontario has, or
Ontario's got theirs back.
Oh, they just got it back. Okay, well, they may have got it back because of the tourist dollars. I mean, we get so many hunters coming here from the United States. Well, last year we had one, or 2 years ago we had one all the way from Australia.
Yep.
And spring bear is a huge moneymaker for the province. So,
well, not only that, it actually does help manage the population again as well. We talked about this a couple minutes ago.
But that's not what the politicians care about. You can't go in and say, we're going to manage the population. They want to know about tax dollars.
That's true, yes. But the official line from the reports that I've been reading is that the number of human to bear incidents has risen drastically since they canceled the spring bear hunt in Ontario, and this is one of the main reasons why they considered bringing it back, is because they wanted to manage the population better. And so I think that has I think that's got to have some sort of play on why it came back. But I think, Trevor, you're right, the huge numbers of dollars that come in from people who want to shoot bears, I mean,
yeah. Non-resident licenses.
Why deny them that? Yeah, why deny them that if you've already got a bear problem to begin with? Yep. Capitalize on it. I mean, this is North America. We're supposed to be capitalists.
Exactly.
What? There's logic there somewhere, Owen. Stop laughing at me.
I do not think that word means what you think it means. But anyway.
Nice. Pulling out a Princess Bride quote. Love it. All right. Well, up next, we mentioned earlier, we do have Sean Bevins of the NFA. He is the executive vice president of the organization, and he joined us to talk a little bit about what's been going on recently in Canada. All right. So joining us now, we have Sean Bevins, executive vice president of the NFA. Welcome to the show, Sean. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We've been trying to get you on for a little while now, and finally our schedule's meshed up, so it's fantastic to have you on. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your role with the NFA, and we'll kind of go from there after that.
Sure. I'm originally from, I was born in Scarborough, Ontario, moved down to Windsor, Ontario, where I lived for many years, and then actually almost married an American girl on the Detroit side. Lived in Detroit for a little while, and then moved from Detroit and ended up in Drummondville, Quebec. Married with two kids, a gun dog and a ferret.
And a ferret. Who doesn't need a ferret?
Yeah, well, I've been actually eyeballing it. I think it would make a pretty sweet change purse, but I don't think my wife would go along with that. Yeah. I've been involved with guns most of my life. I was... I'm not a newbie by any term sense of the word, I suppose. I've been around guns, and many generations of my family were fanciers of firearms and hunters and shooters, and that's just kind of how it was in my family. And I've been shooting ever since as long as I can remember, I suppose.
Cool. So what got you involved with the NFA?
I'd been a member for a very, very long time. I guess what really got me... kind of activated and really kind of outraged and kind of, I suppose, provoked me to dig a little deeper into the criminal code and see some of this horrible stuff that we're facing, was that Quebec has in the last couple of years passed some ridiculous laws, and some of the stuff goes beyond the scope of the Firearms Act, and that's actually probably most of the stuff is non-constitutional. So for those who don't know, after the Kimber Gill shooting at the University of Montreal, they decided that all gun ranges, they had this rule that's called no blue sky. So when you're in a range, you can't shoot from the prone position, you can't shoot from the standing position, you have to sit at a table, and they've got these barriers that you can't see. Like, if you literally, when you're looking down the scope of your gun, all you can see is basically the target. Like, you can't, they've got like these big wooden barriers to block your view, so you can't see. If you stood up, you wouldn't be able to shoot. And I mean, there's a whole bunch of other stuff. You know, then with the Law 9, you know, they decided that there was no more lateral movement for IPSC shooters, you know, so you couldn't run forward. Just ridiculous stuff. And what they did was they put in place this to be compliant with the provincial law, which is Law 9, They actually, as it works out, our federation, our Quebec Shooting Federation here in Quebec, actually gives courses for Law 9, and it costs you $50. Well, the way this all went down was, prior to this particular position, I worked in the gambling industry as a business development director, and I travel a lot. So my pistol range membership had expired, and, you know, according to the criminal code, I had, within a reasonable delay, up to a year to renew my club membership to continue for my restricted permit to be valid. So I get a letter when I get back from the road, and I get this letter in the mail saying that, my club membership had now expired, and that was only about a week delay between the time that it expired and the time that I got the letter. So and they threatened to call and tell the advise the CFO that I was no longer a member, that I could get my gun seized. And now the Law 9 course that I had took to become a member of this club, I had to retake it for another $50. And I was outraged. I mean,
yeah, no
it
kidding.
Literally
that's just piracy there. They're just stealing your money.
Yeah, and this is common practice in Quebec. This is what they do. This federation is absolutely, and I don't even mind saying it publicly because they've already threatened me. They've sent me letters and tried to suspend and all kinds of stuff, but they are absolutely horrible. They're just a branch of the CFO. They don't represent their members in terms of, fighting for their rights or defending them with regards to different things that the CFO wants to, wantonly, obviously, arbitrarily put things in place. So that's kind of really what turned me into an activist. I just had enough, and I was so upset about it. And it's not a question of, as most of us, it's not a question of the $50. Obviously I about an hour at the range, depending on which firearm I'm shooting, I can rip through $50 of ammo in no time. So it's not a question of the money. It's a question of principle. It's a question of that I'm a law abiding citizen. I'm a good person. I'm a father. I'm a respected member of my community. I volunteer, I give to charity, reflective of most of our community. And for us to be treated that way, to be threatened that my door would be kicked in and my guns would be seized because my club membership had expired, it really put me over the edge. So I and then obviously with Quebec's attempt to go after the long gun registry, I became more and more involved, and I decided that I was going to take them to court. And then through that whole process, I ended up working with the NFA, and we did some organizing here in Quebec, and I went out to their AGM, and I went to the AGM last year, and they were really impressed with what we had done in Quebec, because for a long, long time, the NFA was claiming, it was a national organization, and the CCC, claimed that they're a national organization. Well, you're not a national organization if you don't have representation across the province or across the country. And that's whether you agree with Quebec or you don't, or you like Quebecers or you don't, it's still a part of Canada, and until otherwise, we're people that live here are all still Canadian. So there really wasn't representation from either organization here. The NFA had about 350 members here in Quebec, and obviously we're the largest insurer of club insurance in the country. So we did have some shooting clubs, but the membership was relatively low. And as we started to really become active, and we created a couple of Facebook pages, and we really started to go out and get, recruit new NFA members, it really, the NFA in Quebec really, really took off. So, and it continues to grow. I think it's about 9% of our total membership across the country is in Quebec. So Quebecers have had enough. They're fed up. And obviously with the last elections, the message is clear that sovereignty is dead here. So, now we can maybe move on and concentrate on getting some of these ridiculous things. And the Law 9, Law 20, repeal, they're going to be going to the Supreme Court. I'm going to be actually going to those hearings to fight for the long gun registry. So that's kind of how I got involved. And the NFA was, I went to their AGM, and they were really proud of the work that I did. And they said, you've got a background in sales and marketing and business development. And, we're very pleased with what you've done. I was pretty honored. I got the Recruiter of the Year award. So obviously I'd recruited a lot of people. And, I get a phone call about a week later from Sheldon Clare, and he says, would you like to come and work for us? And I was, it was one of those things where, I was looking at, just like anybody else, and you get a job offer, you look at the pros and the cons, and, I was taking pretty major pay cuts. So, but I'm passionate about, firearms. I'm passionate about freedom and liberty, and I'm passionate about our community. And I think it's, you know, I can't sit down and just, I don't know. It goes against, I guess, who I am as a person, you know, to sit there in the corner and just let this stuff happen to our community when we're such good people. And, you know, I've had been fortunate enough to travel across the United States and Canada, and I've been to many, many places, and I've met many, many people. And, you know, good, you know, gunnies are good people. You know, I've yet to meet, you know, I mean, with the odd exception of some, you know, idiots, there are always idiots, but for the vast majority, gunnies are good people. And I lit a fire, and here I am.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like quite the journey that you've made there. So, in light of all of the kind of, I don't know, hot topic stuff that's been going on in Canada recently, that's kind of the main reason why we've had you on the show this week. What can you tell us a little bit about what the NFA has been doing with the recent reclassification?
Okay, so just so everybody knows, you know, I was immediately when I accepted the position with the NFA, we felt it was important that the NFA, because we've always, I mean, just in our board structure and our executive board structure, it's all democratically elected, all volunteers, nobody's a paid employee. So transparency, honesty, and integrity are three very important things for the organization fundamentally as a group. So it was important that we get registered as a lobbyist, as an official lobby group, and the transparency that comes with that, because obviously you can't have government funding, you can't be involved, you know, so there's certain criteria that have to meet. So I immediately registered myself as a gun lobbyist. By the way, I'm the only one in Canada. there's only one registered lobbyist, pro-gun lobbyist for the commissioner of lobbying in Canada, and that's me.
Oh, that's cool.
Kind of a funny thing. But so back and forth in discussions, lobbying these fellows in Ottawa, had a bunch of different meetings. I had about 10 or 12 different trips to Ottawa over the last year and a half, you know, lobbying these guys for change. The NFA submitted, I don't know maybe if any of your listeners might be aware, but there was Rob Anders from Calgary, an MP. He actually brought forward our 5 points. So the 5 points that I think he actually did a petition at one point, but we put these 5 points forward. Those were collectively put together by Gary Mauser and myself and Sheldon Clare and the rest of the executive team, Solomon Friedman. So we put these things together, and I lobbied around that for about a year, year and a half, and the relationship became actually quite positive with public safety. So we were meeting directly with the ministers, folks. I had actually met the minister on numerous occasions. And so the relationship became one of trust, I suppose. It's trust and communication and dialogue. Now, obviously, our position's much different than some of the other organizations that are out there, but so there was a relationship of trust there. So I actually got the heads up about the reclassification about 2 days before it happened, and I wrestled with it. Do I keep my mouth shut? Do I, you know, give a heads up to the community? What do we do with the information that we've got? And at the end of the day, we decided that to be responsible towards people that had, you know, some folks, I spoke with one guy that competitively shoots with the Swiss Arms out in, I think he's in Saskatchewan. He's got $50,000 tied up in these guns. And so we decided as the NFA to leak the information to give people a heads up. And, you know, in hindsight, it was probably one of the best decisions that we ever made, because as we all know, as you guys know, and anybody that follows the firearms issue, a lot of times when they change these FRT numbers, they don't advise anybody. And especially now with the long gun registry gone, I mean, literally, how are they going to, legally, they can't under C-19 advise anybody if they've been reclassified, because that would suggest they're using the long gun registry. So it would have been one of these things where it would have been quietly done, you know, as usual, as they did with the Mossberg the 715 magazines.
Yeah, something like that. Yep.
Yeah, they reclassified those, and there was no stink made. No, nobody knew. You know, nobody, yeah. And still, to this day, people don't know. So I think had we have kept our mouths shut, probably the whole reclassification thing would not have exploded as it did. And not to say that we're, you know, I'm not here to say, oh, you know, pat me on the back because, you know, we did a good thing. I mean, we didn't really have control at that point of the reaction of the community, and quite frankly, the reaction of the community was overwhelming. I can tell you that the NFA has grown in terms of contributions, implication, I mean, volunteerism, donation. I mean, this last year has been absolutely phenomenal for us. So, you know, it we felt that we had that responsibility, and at the perils of, you know, breaking off communication with public safety. But we did what we did, and you know, we assume the responsibility for what we did, and probably, you know, if we really, really see, you know, in some of the discussions that, I mean, there's many, many discussions of things that the current government wants to change. You know, that they've been saying for a year, there's changes coming, this, that, and the other thing, and there's all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I don't really want to discuss those things because I wouldn't want to put those things out there and then they not happen. And then it'll just get people, you know, it'll let people down, and we don't want to do that. But, I mean, there's some, they have some very positive, you know, if they uphold their, you know, their promise, and Stephen Harper actually promised to repeal C-68, if he, you know, if they implement the changes that are coming, some of the changes are going to be very positive. But up to this point, we haven't seen anything but, you know, an amnesty. So the community over this reclassification thing, you know, through some negative comes some very, very positive things. And one of the positive things is that the community, the culture, all of it has really come alive. I mean, social media, I mean, we're getting phone calls. People are joining at an astounding rate. Like, I mean, the membership growth is incredible. And I'm not saying this because, you know, oh, well, we need another something negative to happen to our community so that, you know, we can get people, you know, wake people up and then they'll join the NFA and the NFA will make up a ton of money. That's not fundamentally what the NFA is about, but it most definitely did shake the community. And, you know, people are standing together and they're writing letters and they're, you know, they're being heard. And, you know, with folks like Sun Media making these issues out known, and the High River Gun Grab, and I mean, it was just an accumulation of very severe things that are affecting our community. And you know, like High River, you know, the largest breach of Canadian civil rights in the history of this country have occurred. You know, like criminal behavior, quite frankly. I mean, that's, you know, they kicked down 1,900 doors, they seized nearly 800 guns without warrant. I mean, it's so I think the community's had enough. You know, we're good people. We contribute to society. We're taxpayers. We're hard workers. We're fathers. We're brothers. We're sisters. We're uncles. You know, it's and the community's just quite frankly had enough. We literally had enough. And everywhere I go, you know, everybody I talk to, people are just fed up and they want change and then they don't want to wait for change. You know, they want change now. You promised to repeal C-68, C-17, and now you have to deliver on that promise.
Sean, we hear a lot of different numbers in social media about the growth that you referred to in the NFA over the no compromise movement as a result of the reclassification. Any idea, like the numbers, the increase, like a percentage? Can you try and quantify it for us in some non-internet rumor fashion?
Well, the actual membership numbers, they're very difficult to, like, I can give them to you today and then, you know, a week we've got 10 clubs that haven't renewed. So it's very difficult because the number fluctuates so frequently.
Yeah. But you know, because not everybody, wasn't there a huge increase in individual memberships?
Oh yeah. There was a huge surge. Oh yeah. I think we brought in, well, we doubled our net membership. Just to give you an idea, I think, like last month alone, I want to say we brought in 3,000 new members.
Wow. And also recruiters. You're recruiting more recruiters.
Yeah, we're actively, and you know, I know you guys are on the
field officers.
Yeah, field officers. Exactly. Yes. And we want, you know, there's always, we've got a very clear political strategy. Our strategy is to have a NFA operative, field operator or field officer, depending on how you want to refer to it.
Oh, like
and everything.
Okay, yeah, operator.
I got my name actually. In the
operator. There you go, an NFA operator. So yeah. Yeah, we want an NFA operator in every single electoral district association across this country.
Nice.
And we have, you know, they've basically stuck their hand in the hornet's nest. You know, and now the community, you know, thank God for social media, because, you know, the poor buggers back in the day in 1994, and I was involved in a little bit of that in the early days, you know, the March on Ottawa, and, you know, how these guys organized without, you know, social media and without internet, I have, it's beyond me. You know, so just to show the level of commitment. And now, you know, I can communicate with our field officers, and I can, we're looking to add one actually right now. I got an email the other day from a fellow in Nunavut who wants to become a field officer. So, obviously, the NFA, in terms of marketing, in terms of image, in terms of action, in terms of message, it's obviously, you know, what the NFA is saying to folks in the community. It's making sense, and you know, they're coming on board, and you know, they want to be part of the NFA, and they want to fight, and they want to join, and they want to be field officers. So, you know, I mean, we have a political strategy for the next elections, and that's to have, you know, people in every single riding across the country be involved in that EDA and to be able to choose who those candidates are. So, I mean, that's the essence of grassroots, right? It's becoming involved, and you know, it's not a full time job. These, you know, the electoral districts or associations, and you know, they might meet maybe once a year. It's not a real big deal, but you have a voice, you have a say in who's going to be the candidate. And you know, if that candidate's not pro gun, then you know, then there are people inside that EDA. And you know, obviously, if you get a field officer that's in an EDA and he's got four or five gunny friends, you know, it's really funny how. A lot of people don't know how easy it would be if we really wanted to get what we wanted to get. It would be so easy. But the problem is that people just don't know how really easy it truly is. And I'll explain it real quick. So you've got an electoral district association, president, vice president, secretary, and treasurer. Okay. So there's four positions in that electoral district association. And then you've got the members. Well, a lot of these ridings where the conservatives won by a very, very slim margin of like 4 or 5 points. The EDAs there are relatively small, okay, meaning that if, you know, you show up, if the gunny shows up at an EDA meeting with seven of his friends, and the only two people that are in that EDA are actually the treasurer, the vice president, the president, and the secretary, well, now when they decide who's going to, because the EDA, the members of the EDA, pick the candidate. So now they might want a red Tory, or they may want, you know, somebody that's anti-gun, or, you know, somebody that's not necessarily good on our issue, but our seven gunnies say, haha, no, we want a pro-gun, pro-liberty, pro-freedom, pro-property rights guy. So who do you think wins at the argument in the EDA, and who do you think becomes a candidate? Pro-liberty, pro-freedom, pro-property rights guy. And that's how simple it is. And then, you know, once those, you know, those folks participate with getting these candidates elected, well, that gives them grassroots power, because now they have the ability to pick up the phone, call that MP, talk to them on a personal level, and, you know, get their issue and their concerns heard. So it's that simple. And these meetings, you know, they maybe once a year, it's, you know, maybe an hour long meeting once a year. It's not a real big deal. And that's how we're going to get significant change, by really, you know, being involved and being an activist, quite frankly, can be, you know, just passing out, you know, flyers to your friends, you know, print off section 117.02 of, you know, warrantless seizure of firearms, and post it up at your gun club, and then talk to people about it. You know, so I mean, just educate people. Being an activism can be done on a small scale, or can be done on a very large scale.
So, Sean, as far as the reclassification, is this in your professional opinion a done deal, and we will pick other battles, or is there any hope to reverse this, do you think?
Well, I mean, the NFA's position is the amnesty is nothing more than delayed theft of property, and we've been. I can tell you that they are really, really feeling the heat. You know, the donations to the Conservative Party traditionally came from the harder core gunny type. Those were the folks that were actually, you know, investing in the party, a lot of money, a lot of time. So they're really, really feeling the pinch, and they're getting thousands and thousands and thousands, if not tens and hundreds of thousands of letters. So they know that there's an issue. And actually, it's funny because I was supposed to go to the EWA show in Europe. Yep. And actually, the EWA show happened right while the reclassification happened. So I actually canceled my trip to EWA, and I went for a trip to Ottawa instead. And while I was there, I was actually told by a member of parliament that, you know, Stephen Harper and caucus, because they meet, caucus meets every single Wednesday. And it was actually, you know, Stephen Harper addressed caucus and said, look, you need to get this addressed, get this fixed and do it now. So, you know, there's willingness. I think a lot of members of parliament aren't necessarily educated on the issue. You know, there's, you know, we've been hearing whisperings for a long time that changes are coming. Now, is this dead? You know, the, you know, some of the, you know, Minister Stephen Blaney did say some things out in public that, you know, that he's going to fix this, this is wrong, you know, these types of things. So, I mean, he's committed to those, to the reclassification. So it needs, they will, I'm sure that they're going to address it. We're hearing, you know, whisperings that, that they are going to address the reclassification. Now, how that's going to, you know, come down, I really can't tell you because, you know, the reclassification is entrenched in the criminal code. So I don't really know how they're going to address the reclassification without, you know, with basically repealing the whole act. You know, and this is the position of the NFA, you know, versus some of the other organizations out there, is that imagine a house that was built in the 1800s, okay? And, you know, it's a house that was built for a small family of two or three. Very tiny little house. Old, crickety, rickety, you know, stone foundation, you know, three foot crawl space, and house is crooked, windows are falling out. And, you know, you have a family of six and your wife wants a brand new home. Well, are you going to patchwork onto the old 1800 house and cob it together and try and make something new out of something old? Or are you just going to, you know, either tear the house down or buy something else? So, I mean, that's kind of our position. You can't tinker with this thing. You know, when the Liberals brought this in, they didn't bring it in incremental measures. They brought it in one fell swoop. And the only way to really get rid of this is to repeal the whole act. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think that I'm almost positive that they're going to address that they will. I mean, we heard that you know, we're going to start hearing changes. The changes we'll start hearing talk about them mainly in June. Now, obviously, what we need our community to do, and obviously your listeners as well, is to keep the pressure up to get them to act and not turn this into an election carrot. Because, you know, quite frankly, what's happening is people are walking away from the Conservative Party in droves. Like, they're really, you know, people have had enough. You know, I mean, you guys get it by the, you know, the no compromise. I mean, you look out on Facebook and, gosh, I look into my friends and all I see is, you know, the no compromise logo. So, you know, it needs to be addressed.
Yes, it does. I agree wholeheartedly. That's a good analogy you made there with the house, and I agree. I mean, why are we continuing to fix something that's broken? Let's just scrap it and start from scratch.
Too many miles on this car.
Yeah, too many.
Failed. You know, the tragic thing about it is that it's failed public safety. Because, you know, see, this is where you know, we were kind of duped into buying a bill of goods that was, you know, that would actually inevitably turn to bite the law-abiding community, and that's exactly what's happened here. And I'm sure all of you, all of us, everybody that, you know, any gunny that I know, there always has been, since 1995, that horror story of that poor guy that got his door kicked down, that got his gun seized, that, you know, the police went through his wife's drawers, and I mean, I think we all know somebody that's happened to. So, but initially, I think the intentions were good, you know. I mean, who doesn't want to save lives? We all want to save lives. I mean, you know, nobody wants to see an innocent person die. You know, at the end of the day, are we ever, ever, ever really going to stop, you know, bad people from doing bad things? You know, no. You know, they'll take gasoline, they'll take fertilizer, they'll take rope, hammer, stone, log. I mean, somebody that's committed to harming another human being is going to, men have been killing each other since, you know, the cavemen days. I mean, it's an unfortunate part of human nature that these things occur. And but I think initially that there was good intention, you know, but we empirically, scientifically, with all the, you know, the academic research that's been done around the subject, we know that this Firearms Act has failed Canadians. You know, it's failed law-abiding citizens, and it's failed Canadians, and it's failing to save lives. It's not saving lives. So, you know, when do we, you know, recognize the failure and then move into an area where we start to develop public policy that actually, you know, has an impact on criminality and things of that nature. So,
Yep, no, that's a good point. Now, we've only got a couple minutes left, just for the sake of fun, I suppose. We had a show here a little while ago. What was that, Trevor?
Yeah, I think you're going right where I'm going.
Yeah, we had a show here a little while ago where we discussed a little bit about what we thought what we could replace the Firearms Act with. What would kind of your ideas be for new legislation? And, I mean, not with too much detail, of course. We've only got about 3 or 4 minutes left. But what would you like to see put in place if we were able to actually scrap the Firearms Act?
Well, what we'd like to see is a criminal registry where the criminals, the people that have been, they've actually been in front of a judge and a judge has found them guilty of an offense that would stop them from being able to acquire firearms. Those checks are already in place right now. They already have those. We wouldn't want to see anything more than, when you walk in to buy a firearm, they do a background check. And if you've got no criminal record that would, stop you from owning a firearm, you get your firearm and you leave. And as drastic as that may sound, the Dr. Caitlin Langman study proved beyond a doubt that everything that we've put in place, including licensing, has no impact on crime at all. None. So, 98% of the crimes that are being committed in this country are being committed with firearms that are coming into the country illegally from the United States. And, we'd like to see changes, not necessarily affecting law-abiding folks, but we'd rather see changes to other areas and other policies, such as border control. We'd like to see money invested, redirected, invested into social policy where, that they... boots on the ground and some of these, because they know.
Wait. You want to take the logical approach to this and actually do it the right way? Oh, that's crazy. That's not the Canadian way.
Yeah, I call it pragmatic.
Yeah, no, I think we've been saying that for years. Let's get to the root of the problem here. Let's stop with this Band-Aid, Firearms Act, because like you just said, it doesn't do anything to address the criminals, the criminal element. They're not affected by this. The only people affected are law-abiding, and we don't need to affect those people because they're already abiding by the law. So we need to... I was done. Go ahead.
Well, what's shocking? I actually did some digging once, and I was shocked to find out, that through the 10 years of the registry, on average it was about 8 homicides a year that were being committed by the person who lawfully owned the firearm. Okay? Only about 8 a year across Canada, which is nothing. I mean, it's not nothing for those folks that died. Obviously, that's tragic. That's tragic, and we all feel for those folks. I mean, but at the end of the day, the numbers, 16 kids, Canadian children, a year choked to death in this country on hot dogs.
That's right. Yeah. So firearms are less lethal than hot dogs. In this obviously very rudimentary example, this is we're not saying that as a fact. But yeah, I see what you're saying. Statistically, in this case, firearms are less dangerous. They're not the evil threat that everybody makes them out to be.
Yeah, in fact, one of the there was some shocking numbers. If any of you guys have had the opportunity to look into the Caitlin Langman study, I invite everybody to do it. You can find it on our Facebook page or on our website. But one of the shocking stats that came out of that, it was an empirical statistic that came out, was that the non-firearm owning public, the average Joe that you would bump into at Tim Hortons that does not own firearms, okay, was 2/3 more likely to commit homicide than a law-abiding firearms owner. So everybody else is 2/3 more dangerous than the law-abiding firearms owner.
Yeah, we're the ones that have the stringent rules put upon them.
Yeah. So, in 2014 and the availability of information and unprecedented levels over the internet and through social media, there are ways that I think that they know the information, they know the hot spots. East Side Vancouver, downtown Winnipeg, they know where the murders and the homicides have been committed. Let's focus on those areas and educate these people and try and get those 18 to 25 year old young males, get them turned away from gangsterism and being a gang member and committing crimes, and then let's try and impact in a positive, let's take them shooting, let's introduce them to legal firearms ownership.
Yeah, exactly. Very good. Well, Sean, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope to have you on again sometime. Good luck with your turkey hunt.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Hey, I really, really appreciate it. It's always good to talk to guys from our gun community, and keep up the great work that you do, okay?
Thanks. Once again, we want to thank Sean for joining us. It was absolute pleasure to have him on the show. And look and listen for him. He'll be back, I'm sure. And like we said, you guys want to meet him in person. He's going to be at the charity shoot, and he's going to be at the IPSC SummerSlam event this year. So if you guys are coming out to that, make sure you stop in and say hi to Sean. So I guess that brings us into listener feedback, and we just got one this week, but fortunately it's a bit of a novelette, and it's from Spencer. So Spencer writes, "Hey Matt, they made a law in Florida just for you. Florida lawmakers approve warning shot bill revising self-defense laws." So yay. He continues on, "Your message is being heard. The word is spreading. The people are rising up to demand their warning shots." Oops, never mind. They sat back down. I guess they were just stretching. Oh, it's funny. He continues, "Anyway, I'm glad Owen could rein you in last week before you set the scientific method, otherwise known as because science, back 500 years. As you should know, being educators and all, you can never actually prove a theory is true with the scientific method, no matter how much data supports it. You can only prove a theory false. That's okay, though. While we can never prove that more guns equals less crime, we have already disproved the central tenet of gun control, their insistence that more guns equals more crime." And he is absolutely right there. I may have gone off a little bit too far in that direction, as I sometimes do whenever I get a little bit excited about this sort of thing. But he's right. We can't prove that more guns equals less crime. All we can prove is that, you know, more guns does not equal more crime, and that is a hard scientific fact. He continues on, "After all, here in the States, we have more firearms in the hands of more people than ever before in this country's history. Some 300 million firearms are estimated to be in the hands of 100 million people here. If gun control's more guns equals more crime was supported by data, there would be at least a small increase in violent crime. Yet, as we know, violent crime here keeps dropping, and it's at its lowest levels in 30 years. Gun control? Myth busted. Lastly, I'm finally set up gun-wise for the inevitable zombie apocalypse. My 22 and 30 caliber suppressor stamp showed up a week or so back, and I think I speak for all three of us in saying, we hate you, Spencer. Am I correct?"
No.
No? We don't hate him? Oh.
No.
We're very envious of you, Spencer.
Yes. We're happy that he has freedoms down there that we only dream of.
Yeah, we wish we had these sorts of freedoms. But anyway, whatever. He continues on here by saying, "The 22 can was all he needed to, or was all I needed to get the 10-22 takedown in shape as the ultimate zombie gun. With the 50-round, super-reliable Ruger BX-25-2 double magazine and the Armsen optical red dot, no batteries required, this is definitely an SHTF rifle now. Plus, it packs up incredibly small and light, even with a brick or two of ammo." That does sound like a really cool gun. I'd love to play with something like that. Especially if it was a Marlin 795.
I'd love to play with that Ruger 10-22 if it was a Marlin 795.
By the way, I also included my other EOTWAWKI, which is, of course, end of the world as we know it, gun in the picture, a snub-nose Ruger Security 6 in 38/357. This thing is built like a tank and only has about a half dozen parts, all with enough metal in them to build my own Buick. I could reload empty cases with black powder and match heads and use this thing to shoot small rocks. However, while waiting for the zombie horde to arrive, I've been having a blast with this little 22 suppressor. It works great on my Ruger Mark III, my SR-22, and my Buck Mark pistols, as well as the 10-22. It's also rated for 22 Magnum if I can find something that I can thread in that caliber. My next project will be to get the Black Dog Machine 100-round drum working on the M&P 1522. That's Smith & Wesson's AR-15 and 22 long rifle. That's also the gun that I have the bump fire stock on. Again, envious. We don't hate you. We're just envious.
It's hate.
Yeah. Running faux full auto through a can will probably be worth the $200 stamp right there. I'm pretty sure it'll cost that much in ammo. Have fun, y'all. Keep up the good work. Spencer in Smyrna. Man, that sounds like a lot of fun. I would love to run suppressed stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That would be really cool. I was listening to Gun Dudes, I think, a couple of shows ago. They were talking about running suppressors, and they had somebody on from some place that...
Yes. I listened to that part of that show as well.
Yeah, it was really cool. I learned a lot about suppressors on that show, and it's really neat the way they work and how you can clean them out and the differences between the higher and lower quality ones. And yeah, no, suppressors would be really cool.
Another great suppressor show to catch is Daniel Shaw's last episode called Silent Night.
Oh,
yeah,
I like suppressors. The sounds of that.
Yeah.
Pew pew.
Yeah.
Snap. The crack of the supersonic bullet taking out the, I don't know, street lamp. Yes, we'll call it a street lamp. Cool. All right, well, Spencer, thank you for writing in. We're going to move on to the iTunes review, which there is none. Thank you very much for leaving iTunes reviews, folks. We actually do appreciate it. There haven't been any new ones recently, but that doesn't matter. We still got lots of good 5-star reviews, and we do appreciate each one that gets sent in. If you guys think of it and are bored, go write one up, and we'll probably read it because they're usually quite funny. Just saying.
Who knew that we had so many funny listeners?
Well, when you look at the hosts, I mean.
That's true. Are you saying the listeners are crazier than us?
I'm saying that you need to be a special type of person to enjoy this show. That's all I'm saying. Trevor, what do you have to say about this?
Nothing.
Nothing. That's it.
That's it.
You're being quiet.
Yeah.
That's not allowed.
I concur.
Yeah.
Wait. Yes. I'm Ron Burgundy.
Not yet. Oh my goodness. We've got 20 minutes left. Don't Ron Burgundy us yet.
I have actually something. I'm a little bit concerned about this. I'm not sure. I got my 6 NIA back. I forgot to mention that at the beginning of the show.
Right.
Sent my form in. And anyway, just on a whim, I threw a message out to a border guard friend of mine, a U.S. border guard, and he basically said, doesn't matter whether you have a 6 NIA, if you're not coming to a match or to hunt, you don't get in with guns.
So you can't just do a 6 NIA and then go to a friend's house who happens to live in Maine, bring your guns, and just kind of have a backyard shoot.
Exactly.
So you got to get the hunting license then.
He said, you don't need either of those things to get a 6 NIA, because I didn't send any of those in, and I got it back. I mean, it was a month or less that I got it back, approved, and I just wanted to double check, is there any other paperwork I need to bring with me before I go across? And he said, unless you can provide proof that of where you're going, and the only two acceptable proofs would be a shooting competition or to hunt, you're just making a donation.
Hmm. Well, I guess it's time to get a hunting license and shoot some stuff with your Glock.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know. I mean...
Yeah, I'm wondering if you can pull up to the border with your NIA, your Form 6, and a hunting license, and then just your Glock. And can you just say, well, I'm going hunting with my Glock, and are they going to believe you? Are you going to have to produce, like, a guide to go with you? Like, what sort of requirements are there?
No, you buy your alien hunting license, you bring your Glock, and you tell them that you're going to borrow your buddy's rifle or the guide's rifle when you get there. You don't need a guide in Maine for, like... varmints, let's say, if you buy a coyote license.
That's interesting, because here in New Brunswick you do. If you're out of resident, if you're a non-resident, you need a guide to go hunting anything.
Oh, that's a by-province
thing. No, anything. But it's a by-province thing.
That is,
Ontario,
yes.
It doesn't have that.
Yeah. So it, Maine, I'm hoping, doesn't have that either?
I'm not sure.
You have to check into that.
I don't think they do, but right. I'm not really interested in lying to the border guards either.
No, so. Of course not. No, that's true. I mean, the thing is, though, you don't need to be lying if you tell them you're going hunting with your Glock. You can go hunting with your Glock while you're over there. You don't have to be successfully
also,
hunting, but you can go hunting.
You can carry it.
Yeah, but he still has to get it in, right?
Yeah, well, he's allowed to bring it in if it's on the 6NIA.
If he has a hunting license.
And if I'm going hunting.
And Owen's just saying here, he doesn't want to tell them he's going hunting if he's not actually going hunting. And, you know, that's a good point. You don't want to lie to them because not only is it morally wrong, you can go to jail for that.
Matthew, do you remember we were going to go over and hang out with Tiffany and her brother and we were going to go coyote hunting?
Yep.
Well, we didn't have a guide lined up.
I don't think you need a guide.
I don't think you need a guide for Maine. I don't think they
then
require that.
Yeah.
So I guess the trick here, Owen, then, is to just simply go hunting when you go over.
Yeah,
you know,
and
just,
hunting could be driving down the road, keeping your eyes peeled.
That's it. I mean, that's how I hunt. Actually, I don't drive
that's
down the road,
walk.
But that's how I walk.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Yeah, I don't know. It's. I mean, to me, it's still such a gray area. I'm like, I'm not gonna risk it.
Yeah.
That's basically what the guy told me, but he's kind of. I might call.
Maybe call somebody else.
Yeah, I might actually call them and get a second opinion because I'm not really convinced this guy knows the actual law. I mean, it's like any law enforcement. They don't know every law.
That's right. And I find a lot of law enforcement, and really anybody with any sort of, I guess, for lack of a better term, any sort of person who's in sort of any sort of authority, I guess, they tend to kind of exaggerate what the actual stipulations are.
Yep.
I've heard, I can't count how many cops I've heard say, you must double lock all guns when transporting them in Canada, which is absolutely false.
That's why I keep a copy of the RCMP safe storage guidelines in my gun case.
Yep.
Okay. Do you want to hear a really good one?
Yes, I do.
This wasn't actually from, this wasn't from a law enforcement, but I had a guy at the range the other day tell me, that it was illegal for me to have a flashlight on my AR.
Wow. That's funny.
Yeah.
Illegal to have a flashlight on your AR.
Yeah, he must be thinking that you're going to go Jack Deere with your AR in Carrollton County.
Still not. Please
Which
point to me the law.
On so many levels.
Please point to me the law that says I cannot attach a flashlight to a firearm. I don't even care if it's provincial law or federal law. I don't think that law exists.
How about a range law?
Yeah,
you
I mean
anything.
Yeah, I've heard that one before too. I've heard I had a gun store clerk tell me that once. He said no, you know, because I was ordering a stock and it had the capability of having a flashlight on it. He's like, oh no, you can't have that stock because you can put a flashlight on it. Like, what? No, because you can put a flashlight on it, you can't have it because you're not allowed to attach flashlights to guns in Canada.
I heard the same thing about archery. You couldn't tape a flashlight to your stabilizer, but I mean. There's no practical need for a flashlight on a stabilizer unless you're in a tree stand after dark.
Yeah.
Sure, but what if, you know, still, just because there's no need for it.
Yeah, there's no point in having a flashlight on a gun except when it's dark.
Yeah,
but in this province, they think the only need for a flashlight on a firearm is to jack a deer, right?
Right.
Now,
but that's not the case.
Jacking a deer is illegal. They figure that having the flashlight on the gun is illegal, but no, jacking a deer
is
illegal.
I challenged this guy on it a little bit. And he kind of backtracked a little bit and started talking about a discussion he had with DNR. And he's a trapper, and he has a nuisance, what do they call that, Matthew? A dispatch permit.
Right.
And he works all day, and then he goes out, you know, in evenings and at night to do his traps. And he said, what if I'm in the bush and I walking up on a coyote that's still alive, you know, and I have to dispatch it, which I can legally do.
Yep.
What's the difference between holding a flashlight in my mouth and having a flashlight attached to my gun?
Yeah, it's no difference.
And DNR was like, oh, wow, we never thought of that. You know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, as long as you don't get caught using that for jacking deer, what's the problem?
Exactly. Because then the illegal part is jacking the deer.
That's right. And that, I think, yeah, we've talked about that before. You know, we have laws that prohibit us from doing things that are illegal. Why do we don't need extra laws telling us that, well, now you can't do this either because it's also illegal? No, it's the same thing. You've already said that that's illegal. Everything else is just, yeah, just making it difficult for us to live our lives in any sort of freedom. So, yeah, Trevor, you're going to put a flashlight on your T97 now? You can take it out coyote hunting?
Absolutely.
I mean, you can be out there legally with your flashlight on your gun. Coyote hunting doesn't mean you got to shoot them after dark.
That's, yeah.
that would blow up some conservation mind or head, wouldn't it? He'd come out there and see that. He'd just basically melt. It's like, you've got a black gun and a flashlight on it. What are you doing?
Yeah. That's funny. Crud. Show me, yeah. And I don't have any proof that it's non-restricted because the non-restricted registry no longer exists.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, we got the T97 out and we ran it, and I ran it with that Tula ammo. And
that's that steel case stuff.
Yeah, 62 grain steel case. I expected it to be more accurate through my NEA than it was, given the twist rate in the NEA barrel. However,
like I've said before, that NEA, for whatever reason, that barrel likes 55 grain ammo.
I concur.
It doesn't make sense. It's not logical. It defies all the others, everything you read in here. But it likes 55 grain ammo for some reason.
It does. It does. It shoots really well. It shoots better with 55 and 62, actually.
Yep.
But the thing about the Tula, I was warned about from one of our listeners. I think it was Mike Rose. He tried some of that Tula in his NEA, and it was getting stuck in the chamber. So he advised me to take a cleaning rod with me the first time I tested it. And, of course, being the numpty that I am, I forgot.
But we didn't have any problems.
No, we had no issues. We had no issues in the T97 or in the NEA.
AR, yeah, the AR, yeah. Mm. All right, well, let's move on to some shout-outs then. First up to Todd Brown. This is Todd Brown of the Concerned Gun Owners of Calgary. We've had him on the show a couple times before, and I'm sure we'll be getting him on again sometime. He let us know that our effort is making an effect in Parliament. He doesn't know what's happening in detail, but he did say that they are working on something because they know they have to do something if they want to count in our support for the next election. And it's funny, we got that same message sort of after the show a little bit with Sean tonight. He was mentioning that we are having a huge effect in Parliament. So please keep up the letter writing, keep up the phone calls, keep up the faxes. We need to put a lot of pressure on our government right now to make sure they do the right thing. The next shout out is to Randall Saint Awesome. And I'm not sure if that's your real name, but if it is, that is awesome. He is an associate of Filthies, I believe, and he has made up an X-ray poster or a Glock poster of an X-rayed Glock, so you can sort of see through the Glock on this poster, and it is really neat. So I can't wait to hang that on the wall. So thank you to you. I was just gonna figure whoever had this next one would just jump in and do the shout out at this point.
Oh, that would be me, right?
Right. That would be you.
To Jeff Reese at the Calgary Shooting Center once again for all the happy time magpul goodness. Thanks, brother.
Cool. All right, well, please be sure to check us out on the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network as well as the Crusader Podcast Network. Those are both excellent networks to check out similarly themed content. Please join one or both of our National Firearms Associations, the CSSA and the NFA. They both do great things for us here in Canada. Please sign up if you haven't already. Check us out on the Gun Owners of Canada web forum. We have a presence there. We have our own little forum kind of area. You can go and talk about the show there and interact with us, which is really cool. We love hearing from you there. And of course, like us on Facebook. 982 likes and counting. So we are still steadily climbing. So let's get to 1,000. And I don't know what's going to happen then, but it'll be cool, I guess.
Yes, we'll maybe do something.
Sure. All right, well, take us out, guys.
Thanks for listening.
Stay classy, San Diego.
And we'll see you guys next week.
I'm on Burgundy.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time.
time to get a gun.